Most people in China now live in cities, according to the United Nations. That's a huge change from a few decades ago. Urban areas have added hundreds of millions of people.
To make room for expanding cities, local governments have demolished tens of millions of existing homes over the past decade. Homeowners have fought back, blocking heavy machinery, battling officials, and also trying an especially disturbing tactic. Human rights groups and news reports say that since 2009, more than 50 people have set themselves on fire to protest the destruction of their homes.
To be clear, this trend is different than Tibetans who've set themselves on fire over Chinese policies in Tibet. This trend is all about real estate, about home. Some listeners will find this next report disturbing, so we'll warn it's going to last about 6 minutes. NPR's Frank Langfitt reports on a self-immolation in Hunan province in south-central China.
Late last month, dozens of officials and cops arrived with a pair of excavators at the farmhouse of Hemengqin. They want to level his village to make way for a park. The park is part of a grand plan to develop the economy of Chenzhou, a city of around 500,000. He's a 42-year-old rice farmer. He'd refused the government's compensation offer of about $33,000. His farmland is his only source of income, and he figured he'd need a lot more money to survive without it. So when the officials came for him, he locked himself inside his house. As family members videoed the scene, the excavators demolished a nearby home, and officials pried open his door with a crowbar. He then poured gasoline over his head, opened a tank of cooking gas, and lit himself on fire. His brother, Wai Qing, describes the scene. There were the sounds of explosions, two of them, the brother says. Very thick smoke and fire were coming out of the window. His family watched as he burned inside his home. A water truck pulled up and fired water through the window. Eventually, workers carried He, his body badly burned, from the building. Wai Qing says he never imagined his brother would try to kill himself. But his sister-in-law, Li, says he couldn't afford a new house and had run out of options.
He is already in his 40s and has no diploma. His child and the entire family depend on him. He said if he goes out to find work, he would not be able to find any because he has no education and is growing old. He asked, "How can I survive in the future?" The government said, "That's your business." He was helpless and was forced to self-immolate.
I'm in the room where Mr. He lit himself on fire, and you can see that there was a big explosion. The walls and the ceiling are charred black, and on the floor, it's all just soot and ash.
His brother said he warned officials demolishing the house carried risks.
I told a government official that forced demolition would lead to someone's death. He replied that if someone dies because of this, the government will provide compensation, and it has the money to do so.
The local government blocked official news coverage of the incident. In a statement to NPR, Chenzhou officials said He's house was illegal, that he wanted more than $600,000 in compensation, and that his wife urged him to light himself on fire. He's wife, Huang Xiaoying, denied all of that. Radio Free Asia, which first reported the story, recorded an unnamed official saying the self-immolation was really just a ploy to get more money.
The common people want to get extremely rich through home demolition. They want generations to benefit. That's impossible.
My name is Corinna Barbara Francis, and I'm the China researcher for Amnesty International.
An Amnesty report last year showed that more than 40 people had lit themselves on fire to protest home demolition. Francis says they weren't driven by greed, but desperation.
I think they've come absolutely to the end of their rope. Many of them we know have tried to work through the system. That has failed. They have been neglected. They have been abused.
Yin Sherming felt that way. He used to farm rice and mushrooms in Hunan province. In March 2011, construction workers came to knock down his home to make way for apartment buildings. He doused himself with gas. Yin said he felt angry and helpless. Here's how he put it to China's Southern Metropolis newspaper.
We have filed so many administrative lawsuits, but they make no difference. The courts and the law are of no use to us. We went to Beijing to appeal to higher authorities for help, but we were caught just that afternoon. The police wouldn't protect us. We were taken to a local police station and beaten up by the policemen.
Yan never lit himself on fire. Officials stopped him. But the sort of land seizure that drove him to despair is common.
Nowadays, more than 43% of the villages in China have experienced land takings.
Yugao works for Landesa, a rural land rights organization based in Seattle. He says local governments seize farmland to make money, urbanize, and develop their economies. Yu says land sales make up more than 40% of local budgets.
If the government take away that land and convert into highways, apartment buildings, land value will increase a lot.
In the first 9 months of this year, city governments brought in more than $300 billion from land sales. But most farmers never receive anything near the market value of the land they lose. In fact, a 2011 Landesa survey found that more than one in five farmers weren't paid anything at all. One reason, Yu says, is corruption.
Unfortunately, you know, the compensation money out of land takings could easily be intercepted, you know, by local officials. And there is a level of greed, I think. They don't have enough empathy, you know, to the plight of the rural farmers.
Yu consults with officials in Beijing on land seizures.
They are very concerned. And the government now knows if they don't fix, you know, related problems, there will be more social unrest.
China's top leaders are expected to hold a crucial meeting next month to plot the future of the nation's economy. The agenda includes an audacious plan to move 250 million farmers into cities over the next dozen years. If poorly implemented, it could wreak havoc. To avoid that, Yu thinks the government will strengthen compensation and farmers' land rights.
I'm quite optimistic. For instance, you know, farmers in the future, you know, they can get 10 times of the current compensation. It really depends on the political view and determination of the top leadership.
Even if those changes come, it may be too late for He Mengqing. He's still in a coma in the hospital, according to his brother. His family members understand why the local government wants to develop the area and improve the economy. They even support the idea. His brother, Wai Qing, just objects to how it's done.
They're too powerful. We have no way to stop them. If they're really determined to do it, I can only watch them destroy our homes. This type of blind development has no consideration for ordinary people.
Instead of raising farmers' living standards, he says, the government is only driving them down. Frank Langford, NPR News, Shanghai.